On Friday, the 3rd of May, 1985, as part of a series of articles exploring aspects of the 40th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe, the Daily Mirror, a famous British tabloid newspaper, ran a story headlined, "This British Housewife Was in Hitler's Bunker." A couple of days earlier, a report had doorstepped the housewife in question at a comfortable home in Cambridge, and the formidable Mrs. Elsa James gave him short shrift. But 70-year-old Mrs. James had an extraordinary story to tell, a story that she resolutely refused to tell anyone, and a story that I've been trying to piece together for over a year. For Mrs. James was no ordinary housewife. She was, in fact, Elsa Krüger, chief secretary of none other than the sinister Martin Bormann, Hitler's personal secretary and leader of the Nazi Party Chancellery, who upped and disappeared into thin air on the 2nd of May 1945 in war-torn Berlin, and whose fate still remains somewhat of a mystery even today. And Elsa Krüger, whom two of Hitler's secretaries alleged was Martin Bormann's mistress, as well as his secretary, had been in Hitler's bunker to the bitter end, and somehow managed to escape from Berlin. Even more extraordinary was her transformation from Bormann's trusted secretary to British housewife, and her enigmatic refusal to discuss the last days of Hitler's life that she had witnessed firsthand, rebuffing historians and reporters throughout her entire life. Krüger, born in Hamburg in February 1915, had joined Bormann's staff in late 1942. And towards the end of the war, she presided over a pool of 30 secretaries and typists who worked for Bormann. In the last weeks of the war, she spent large amounts of time at Bormann's side in the Führerbunker, busy dealing with her boss's constant reports and instructions, and working closely alongside Hitler's remaining secretaries. When Hitler initiated Operation Seraglio, the evacuation of many of the bunker staff and files to the relative safety of Obersalzberg in Bavaria, Krüger volunteered to remain in the bunker along with a handful of Hitler's female staff. His secretaries, Gerda Christian and Traudel Junger, and his dietitian, Constanze Manziali, even as Soviet forces closed in on the city. In fact, Krüger and Christian were believed dead for some time after the war, as they were listed as air passengers on the last evacuation flight on the 23rd of April 1945, after this aircraft crashed in Bavaria, the reason being that Krüger and Christian's luggage was recovered from the wreckage. However, Krüger remained resolutely at her post, becoming very friendly with Hitler's girlfriend, Eva Braun, and sometimes taking tea with her and Hitler in the bunker during the chaotic last days of the war. During this period, Martin Bormann was continuing his intrigues around Hitler whilst also making arrangements for his own survival, principally sending messages to Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz, nominated successor to Hitler, at his headquarters in Flensburg in northern Germany, making clear his intention to join him shortly and take up a position in the new Nazi government. That new Nazi government's authority would lie in a document Hitler dictated to his secretary, Traudel Junger, in the early hours of the 29th of April 1945, his political testament. Krüger was involved with the drafting and copying of this document and Hitler's private will and personal testament, which Hitler signed eventually after many revisions at 4 a.m. on the 29th of April. The political testament was in two parts, and part two set out Hitler's intentions for the German government and Nazi Party after his death, and detailed his successors. Dönitz was named as President of the Reich and Supreme Commander of the German Armed Forces, with Dr. Josef Goebbels, the propaganda minister, appointed Chancellor of the Reich and Martin Bormann, party minister. It was necessary for copies of these legal documents to be delivered personally to Dönitz, and three copies made by Junger, with the probable assistance of Krüger, were sent out by three couriers from Hitler and Bormann's staff, though none actually made it to Dönitz in the north, and these copies were either captured or destroyed. However, we will return to the issue of these Hitler documents later, as I've found forgotten archival documents that show the existence of a fourth, unknown copy of Hitler's will and personal and political testaments that survived the war. Elsa Kruger was present at Hitler's marriage to Eva Braun, and again shortly before Hitler and Braun's alleged suicides. She was part of the lineup of bunker staff that Hitler and his wife bade farewell to on the afternoon of the 30th of April 1945, shaking Hitler's hand and embracing Eva before they disappeared into Hitler's study for the final time. Thereafter, Kruger returned to her work alongside a stressed, exhausted, and heavy-drinking Bormann, as an attempt was made by new Reich Chancellor Goebbels to negotiate a ceasefire with the Soviets. Goebbels failed and committed suicide on the 1st of May. Bormann was now the most senior Nazi official in the Führerbunker. SS Brigadeführer Wilhelm Mohnke, battle commandant of the government district, where heavy fighting still continued, had been given permission by Hitler to organize a breakout attempt by the remaining bunker personnel and defense troops, attempting to infiltrate through Soviet lines and head northwest out of Berlin. 10 escape groups were organized, and Kruger, Junger, Christian, and Manziali were included in Group 1, led by Mohnke himself. Bormann would leave with Group Number 3. Interestingly, Kruger had been the secretary who had been ordered to draft the lists of who should go in which group. She had typed them all up, and Mohnke had then taken them in to Hitler for his final signature. Kruger said little of the final days in the bunker. The one thing she did, fairly consistently, was tell people that Bormann was dead, that he couldn't have survived outside of the bunker. In the affidavit she gave to U.S. Army Intelligence on the 17th of June 1946, she describes speaking to Bormann for the last time on the 1st of May 1945 in what she called the Reich Chancellery Bunker, which may refer to the bunkers adjacent to the Führerbunker. She claimed that, at the time, she no longer worked for Bormann. Quote, "His last words to me," Kruger recalled in 1946, which he uttered during a chance encounter in the bunker were, "So, goodbye, this doesn't make much sense." Bormann referred to the breakout attempt due to begin that night. He added, "I will try, but I'm sure I won't get through." End quote. Kruger's statements concerning Bormann's fate were unequivocal. At the Nuremberg trial, where she appeared as a witness at Bormann's trial in absentia, she said, quote, "He must have died. He was not streetwise. A fatal thing to be in the Berlin of May 1945, end quote. She basically spoke ill of Bormann, a strange position when one considers that she had volunteered to remain at his side as his chief secretary in the Führerbunker, refusing evacuation to Bavaria. Her utterances at the Nuremberg trials were quite damning concerning her former boss. She said that Bormann, quote, "was a brutal man of violent temper and rude manners. He was helpless when left on his own," end quote. She also added, "I feel pretty certain that Bormann was killed and the Russians picked up his body without realizing who he was. He was not wearing any insignia of rank and could easily have been mistaken for an ordinary SS trooper. There were innumerable bodies lying about in the streets. If he did get away, he would have been caught by now. He wasn't clever enough to last so long." End quote. Both Gerda Christian and Traudl Junger said to post-war researcher James P. O'Donnell, a former U.S. Army intelligence officer, that in their opinion, Kruger was Bormann's mistress. Could Kruger's damning comments about Martin Bormann be a case of the lady protesting too much? More than one author would suggest that Kruger's statements concerning Bormann's fate were designed for Allied consumption, and of course her complete refusal to discuss what happened in the bunker or to Martin Bormann deeply suspicious. Anyway, the night of the 1st to 2nd of May saw the breakout from the ruined Reich Chancellery proceed. The women taking part dressed in army uniforms stripped of insignia and wearing steel helmets. A curious incident allegedly occurred before Group 1 departed when Brigadeführer Mohnke handed Hitler's secretary, Gerda Christian, a small pouch of loose diamonds for safekeeping. A ridiculous story was later spun by bunker participants that the diamonds had actually been held by General Bergdorf, Hitler's army adjutant, for use in the construction of high-level Nazi awards. If so, they would have been in the Berlin jewelers that made such medals, not in Hitler's bunker. Clearly, small bags of diamonds were some of the best mobile wealth for fugitives to take when going on the run. They were light, easy to conceal, and very valuable. Others have suggested that Christian gave this pouch of diamonds to Elsa Kruger to carry. Either way, though both Christian and Kruger managed to escape to Western Allied lines, the diamonds were never seen again, and both denied ever having had them. We will return to this later. It was also alleged by none other than General Moncke himself, who survived a decade of Soviet captivity before moving to West Germany and giving many interviews about Hitler's last days, that Christian or Kruger was given the until then unknown fourth copy of Hitler's political testament. If true, then this made either or both of these secretaries official couriers. Further corroboration of Kruger's purported courier role came from Kruger herself. In a letter I uncovered in the archives of famous British historian Hugh Trevor Roper, Kruger wrote on the 22nd of February 1977 to Trevor Roper that we, meaning Kruger and Christian, quote, had a letter from Goebbels to Dönitz, end quote. If they were carrying a letter from deceased Reich Chancellor Goebbels to new Reich President Dönitz, they sound like couriers to me. However, as we will see, in later life, Kruger took measures to deny having had any official function during the escape from Berlin, or to also be in possession of the fourth copy of Hitler's political testament, as alleged by Moncke. So how did Kruger manage to escape from Berlin, when nearly everyone else was either captured or killed? As I said, leading Group 1 was Brigadefuhrer Moncke, and the other prominent male members of this group were Sturmbannführer Otto Günscher, Hitler's personal adjutant, Reich Foreign Minister von Ribbentrop's representative at Führer headquarters, Walter Hövel, and Vice Admiral Hans-Erich Voss, Hitler's naval liaison officer. Apart from the four women, including Kruger and Moncke, Günscher, Hövel and Voss, the group also contained some other SS officers and SS troops from Hitler's escort command, all heavily armed. The night of the 1st of May 1945, these people, in small groups, crossed from the Reich Chancellery's Court of Honour to Wilhelmsplatz under sporadic Soviet fire. They ran to the Kaiserhof U-Bahn station entrance and walked along the relatively safe underground tunnels to Friedrichstrasse station. A block tunnel forced them onto the street. One part of the group had already disappeared into the crowds at Friedrichstrasse station, but Moncke led the bulk of the group across the Weidendamm Bridge to the other side of the Spree River. They proceeded through the courtyards of the Charité Hospital and via connecting cellars onto Schausestrasse, eventually making it to Wedding station. Reduced in numbers by now by desertions and casualties to only 20 to 25 people, including the four women. Coming under machine gun fire from two Soviet T-34 tanks, the group got smaller still before, on the morning of the 2nd of May, the survivors entered the big air raid shelter next to the Schultheiss Patzenhofer Brewery on Prinzenallee. The brewery and cellars were full of hundreds of German troops from many units, and the brewery was also the command post for Oberst Harry Hermann, commanding what was left of the 9th Fallschirmjäger Division. Moncke conferred with the senior officers present, hoping to continue with the breakout attempt, and many more Führerbunker personnel also turned up, among them the former commanding officer of Hitler's bodyguard unit, SS Gruppenführer Johann Rattenhuber. Interestingly, Kruger told the Nuremberg trial that Rattenhuber had informed her of Bormann's death, having been a member of Bormann's escape group. Quote, I met SS Gruppenführer Rattenhuber on the way. He was a member of Bormann's escape party and told me their Panzer car had been hit while they were crossing the Friedrichstrasse bridge over the Spree. He said he last saw Bormann lying face downward on the bridge, either dead or severely wounded, end quote. At 3 p.m., Soviet officers approached the brewery as a truce was then already in operation. They demanded the Germans lay down their arms and surrender. At this point, Otto Günscher spoke to the secretaries and Hitler's dietitian, advising them to leave the air raid shelter and try to make it by themselves. They agreed, and a version of the story has Monke giving Gerda Christian the small bag of diamonds at this point. Either way, the women left as one group, including Elsa Krüger. It appeared that Krüger was intent on going northwest towards where Grand Admiral Dönitz's new government was in operation, which would take her into British-controlled territory. Bormann had apparently urged Krüger to only fall into British hands if she was to be captured, claiming that, quote, the British will behave like gentlemen, end quote. Don't forget, Krüger came from Hamburg and would have had relations and friends still living in the area, and Hamburg was indeed captured by the British on the 3rd of May 1945. She probably felt most comfortable with the British, as she and her sister had worked as au pairs in Britain in the 1930s. Working for the families of managers of Schelmex, the work arranged by Sir Henry Detterding, who heavily funded the Nazi Party during its early years and died in 1939. After leaving the brewery, the women split into two groups. Traudl Junger and Constanze Manziali in one, and Krüger and Gerda Christian in the other. Junger left Manziali to go and try to find some civilian clothes for both of them, and returned to see Manziali being led towards a U-Bahn station entrance by two armed Soviet soldiers. She was never seen alive again. Traudl Junger went on alone. Her intention was to reach the British zone as well, but lacking any money, no papers and no luggage, she nonetheless made it to the countryside outside of Berlin, walking for several days, sleeping in barns or sometimes in farmhouses, and being given the odd bits of food and clothing along the way. Incredibly, whilst on the run, she ran into another Führerbunker fugitive, SS Obersturmbannführer Erich Kempke, Hitler's chief driver, who was on his way to try to cross the Elbe River. In fact, Kempke made it all the way to Berchtesgaden in Bavaria, being apprehended by US troops on the 20th of June 1945. Junger couldn't reach Western Allied lines, and eventually she went back to Berlin, arriving in June 1945, and was eventually identified and picked up by the Soviets. She was later released into the British sector of West Berlin in December 1945, suffering from diphtheria. As for Christian and Krüger, their journey was somewhat different. According to statements made by Krüger and Christian, they managed to get to British lines by somehow getting themselves aboard a repatriation train returning French forced labourers from the Soviet zone, themselves posing as French female workers. Apparently, their cover was seen through by French officers on the train, who had the Soviets haul the two women off of it. However, after speaking to the British train commander, he smuggled them back aboard. In this manner, Bormann's secretary and Hitler's secretary disappeared into the chaos of northwestern Germany. If you recall, the two women had in their possession a letter from Dr. Goebbels for Reich President Dönitz, an odd thing to be carrying in a breakout attempt. Could such a high-level letter have been some kind of covering note issued to the couriers carrying copies of Hitler's last will and testament to Dönitz? Whatever its purpose or contents, we will never know. So what became of this fascinating historical object? In a letter I found in the archives from Krüger to Hugh Trevor Roper, dated the 22nd of February 1977, she tells us, quote, "We had a letter from Goebbels to Dönitz, and this, together with personal papers, we tore into pieces and flushed down a lavatory within hours after leaving Berlin." End quote. Elsa Krüger settled in Hamburg and began work as a clerk in an office, but was eventually identified and picked up by British military police for questioning. She was one of the key witnesses to the inner workings of Hitler's government and court, and as Bormann's chief secretary, she had been privy to immense amounts of information concerning Bormann's activities. She was also one of only a handful of people who had successfully escaped the Führerbunker and made it to the West. Most of the others were either dead, missing, or in Soviet detention. She was subjected to interrogations by both British and American intelligence, keen to find out Hitler's fate and that of Bormann. But here things are a little strange. She did speak at length with then-Major Hugh Trevor Roper of the Intelligence Corps, who used her memories as a major part of his 1947 best-selling book, The Last Days of Hitler. But it was the relationship she developed with her other British Army interrogator, Captain Leslie James of the Intelligence Corps, that raises eyebrows still. When she appeared at the Nuremberg trial, a newspaper article noted of Kruger, quote, "Tall, blue-eyed, with a great shock of honey-coloured hair, Miss Kruger enjoyed Hitler's admiration because he believed she corresponded to his Nordic racial theories," end quote. Kruger also had Captain James's admiration, and the two formed a relationship while she was in British custody, a relationship that became official once she was released. During her appearance at Nuremberg, Kruger was lodged in an American-controlled rooming house in the city, which was run by Hungarian aristocrat Countess Ingeborg Kalnoky. Countess Kalnoky would go on to write a book about this subject. The actual book was published in 1974, however, at the Harvard Law School Library is the original unedited manuscript by the Countess. Countess Kalnoky spoke to Kruger frequently, but felt that she was hiding something. Kruger told Kalnoky that Bormann was dead, which is what she also said to the court. Another witness staying at the Kalnoky house was Hitler's official photographer, Heinrich Hoffmann, who despised Bormann. Bormann had deliberately had him sidelined and later excluded from Hitler's inner circle. Kalnoky states that, quote, "Hoffmann tried to draw her out about certain of her former boss's actions and his relationship with Hitler, but Fraulein Kruger, though always friendly, was most unresponsive. The one topic of conversation she avoided was her erstwhile employer. He's got her trained like a poodle," was Hoffmann's disgusted assessment of Fraulein Kruger. End quote. And this was to be Kruger's attitude to the subject of Bormann and Hitler for the rest of her long life. Almost complete refusal to discuss that period of her life, and like Countess Kalnoky and Heinrich Hoffmann, many others have wondered whether she had something to hide. After her release from British custody in 1947, Kruger moved to England with her former interrogator, Captain James, who had been demobilised. They married at Wallasey Registry Office at Christmas 1947 and moved into Ivy Cottage, Green Lane in Wallasey, outside Liverpool. Locals thought Mrs. James was Danish and accepted her as a war bride. Leslie James pursuing a career as an academic, gaining his PhD. No one knew of her previous life as Martin Bormann's secretary. A son, Harold, was born in 1956 when Kruger was 41 years old, but no other children followed. At this time, Kruger and her husband were living in Bedford. Dr. James took a post teaching at Cambridge University in the late 1960s, and Elsa was not bothered by her past until she was approached by former US intelligence officer James P. O'Donnell, who was researching his now famous book, The Berlin Bunker. This is where the problems started. O'Donnell managed to track Kruger down to Cambridge, and she and her husband were living at 1 Lansdowne Road, a leafy suburb of the city. She spoke only briefly to O'Donnell about the war. Quote, "After all these years, she fights tooth and nail to stop the truth coming out," said O'Donnell to the Liverpool Echo in May 1985. Quote, "Personally, whenever I have met her, she strikes me as being hard and not at all pleasant. I wonder if she feels remorse," end quote. O'Donnell's book was due to be published in the UK and US in 1979, but for a couple of years before, Kruger fought tooth and nail to have passages of O'Donnell's manuscript changed or deleted that mentioned her and her activities. I was able to find three unpublished letters she sent to none other than Hugh Trevor Roper, the man who had interrogated her back in 1945, outlining her legal battles over O'Donnell's book and the help that Trevor Roper had given to the couple. In them, she accused Brigadeführer Monke of being a liar concerning her or Gerda Christian having been in possession of the mysterious fourth copy of Hitler's Last Will and Testament. But she did nonetheless confirm that such a document had existed. In a letter dated the 14th of April 1977, she wrote to Trevor Roper, quote, "I believe there were only four copies of the will, typed by Frau Junger in one operation as one original and three copies. as is the habit in Germany to say, drei Durchschläge, meaning one original and three copies, end quote. Monke suggested that he had given a bag of diamonds and a copy of the will to Kruger during the breakout on the 1st to 2nd of May 1945. This was recounted in O'Donnell's book, which Kruger disputed legally through her Berlin lawyer. Her correspondence with Trevor Roper indicated she spent some time trying to get these things changed before they went to publication. As she says here, I do not see why I should let Monke spread completely false statements about me, as these may again be taken up at any time by journalists. My present efforts are directed at getting the publishers to agree as soon as possible not to publish the false statements about me in future editions. I hope, of course, without resorting to legal proceedings. End quote. But Monke refused to withdraw the statement he had made to O'Donnell. It should be noted that Gerda Christian backed up Kruger's denials concerning both the diamonds and also Hitler's will. Kruger was emphatic on this point to Trevor Roper, quote, "As I said before, I and Frau Christian were definitely not given any copy of the will," end quote. But she admitted to possessing and later destroying a letter from Goebbels to Dönitz. Kruger believed the location of the fourth copy of the will was to do with Dr. Goebbels' attempted negotiations with the Soviets on the 1st of May 1945, negotiations that fell but took place between General Krebs of Hitler's staff and General Chukov of the Soviets. In Kruger's opinion, Monke was lying to cover up the fact that he, an SS general, had turned over the fourth copy of Hitler's last will and testament to the Soviets when he had surrendered at the brewery on the 2nd of May 1945. As she explained to Hugh Trevor Roper in 1977, quote, "I think Krebs may have shown the original testament to Chukov, but brought it back with him in order to return it to Goebbels or Bormann. It seems to me extremely unlikely that Krebs left this will with Chukov, as his mission was not successful. I had long talks with Krebs alone before and after he went to the Russians, and he expressed repeatedly his fundamental distrust. After Krebs returned, he probably gave the will back to Goebbels or Bormann. I believe that it was then handed over to Monke to be taken out by him to Dönitz. Monke, I believe, soon after his surrender to the Russians, then handed the will over, and it came into Chukov's possession." End quote. However, as Kruger and Christian were in possession of the official letter from Dr. Goebbels to Reich President Dönitz, it could also be argued that perhaps Monke was right. Perhaps he did hand over the last will and testament to either of these two secretaries to take out, rather than surrender this document to the Soviets. After all, the secretaries were going to attempt to escape from the brewery area, and it was common knowledge that copies of Hitler's last will and testament had been sent, three in fact, ahead of this fourth copy, in an attempt to reach Dönitz. It was deemed extremely important to the remaining bunker leadership. Kruger never explains why they were in possession of the Goebbels letter, and perhaps this fourth copy of Hitler's last will and testament went the same way of that letter, torn into pieces and flushed down a lavatory. Kruger's relationship with Hugh Trevor Roper was interesting in itself. As Major Trevor Roper, Intelligence Corps, he had, as I mentioned, extensively questioned her after her capture in 1945 when she was a prisoner of the British, her testimony forming a large part of his best-selling book on Hitler's last days. Though it should be noted that over subsequent decades, Hugh Trevor Roper's book underwent constant revisions as more and more information came out from both the East and new witnesses, and many things were found to be incorrect in the original version. Elevated to the House of Lords as Baron Dacre of Glanton in 1979, Trevor Roper was elected Master of Peterhouse College, Cambridge in 1980, while Kruger and her husband were living in the city, and Dr. James was lecturing at Cambridge University. James was also a Fellow of Magdalen College. In 1985, the Liverpool Echo newspaper, whose reporter had tracked Kruger to Cambridge, telephoned Lord Dacre at Peterhouse. He was asked if he ever knew her husband, former Intelligence Corps Captain Leslie James, who had been in the same small section of the British Army investigating Nazis in British-occupied Germany. Lord Dacre, quote, denied any knowledge of Leslie James, end quote, which, considering the letters that passed between him and Elsa Kruger on World War II matters, stretches credibility. O'Donnell's book, published in 1979, was changed in the UK edition to alter references to Kruger, but not in the US version. The Jameses decided to move to West Germany, and interest in Elsa Kruger once more abated. Leslie James later suffered a stroke, and Elsa cared for her husband until his death in 1995. Elsa James, née Kruger, died in Germany on the 24th of January 2005 at the age of 89, taking her secrets with her to the grave. During the course of researching this project, I attempted to contact Kruger's son, Harold James, but was told through a journalist who had had some contact with Harold in the past that he, like his mother, has nothing to say about his mother's wartime activities. So what are we left with? Elsa Kruger definitely knew fascinating things concerning Bormann and also Hitler's last days. Perhaps things that might change our entire perspective of what occurred in the bunker and what happened to Hitler and Eva Braun. And also, of course, what happened to Bormann. But for some unknown reasons, refused, unlike most of the bunker survivors, to discuss them with historians for posterity. Yes, she did give some information to Trevor Roper whilst a prisoner of the British, but wasn't questioned in later decades as new information or versions of stories appeared or were challenged in print and interviews, particularly concerning Bormann and his fate. Most of the bunker survivors wrote books and cashed in on their experiences, but not Elsa Kruger. And also, interestingly, her escape companion Gerda Christian also remained silent after the war. The obvious question is, why? Traudl Junger and Gerda Christian, when interviewed by O'Donnell, both stated that Kruger was having an affair with Bormann. And when O'Donnell asked Kruger if this was true, she neither confirmed nor denied it. I definitely think that there was an awful lot more to the enigmatic Elsa Kruger than has been released in the public domain. Countess Kalnocki's assessment that Kruger was likely hiding something seems fairly accurate. If she was hiding something, was it to do with the fate of the fourth copy of Hitler's Last Will and Testament, and that bag of diamonds that caused her so much trouble in the late 1970s and early 1980s? Or due to her alleged relationship with Martin Bormann, perhaps it was something to do with the Reich Minister and his possible escape from Berlin? I have presented here both sides of the story, and it really comes down to who you believe and the reasoning behind decisions taken by those individuals in May 1945. Either Elsa Kruger was unfairly maligned by General Moncke, and she and Gerda Christian were not official or even unofficial couriers, and press and book speculation about Kruger's role in the death of the Third Reich a little better than a campaign of persecution. Or she deliberately concealed her role, and Moncke was right, and the suspicions of authors like O'Donnell were not without some substance. It has to be one of these two scenarios. Many thanks for watching. Please subscribe and share, and also visit my audiobook channel, War Stories with Mark Felton. You can also help to support both of my channels at PayPal and Patreon. Details in the description box below.